The European Patent Office podcasts bring you an insight into the technology and innovation shaping the world.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the European Patent Office, in which we'll be discussing our latest patent index for 2022. Now, this presents the statistics for patent applications to the EPO in the last year. Which technologies are booming or declining, which applicants are more or less active. And if you like trends, rankings, and league tables, then there's a lot to explore in our patent index. My name is Jeremy Philpott, and I work in communication at the European Patent Office. Joining me today are two experienced patent examiners in the field of healthcare. First up, we have team manager Carlos Rivera Pons. He has a master's in industrial and electrical engineering, and he joined the EPO over 20 years ago to work in a variety of medical technologies and is currently active in healthcare informatics. Welcome, Carlos.
Hello, Jeremy. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. And also joining us is Ricardo Cata. Ricardo has a PhD in electrical engineering, specializing in medical electronics. He joined the EPO 10 years ago in healthcare technologies and today is working in medical diagnostic devices. Welcome, Ricardo.
Hello, Jeremy. Hello, Carlos. Glad to be here.
Great to have you both. Now, I want to jump in straight away with the patent index. And what's very obvious is the strength of the top three technology fields we've had. Medical technology has been the leading technology field for applications, well over 15,000 for the last few years. And yet in the last couple of years, it's been just squeezed into second place by digital communication, which is now, I don't know, somewhere about 16,500 applications to the EPO in the last year. And then a close third there, also over 15,000 applications, is computer technology. So when we talk about smart health, which is the bringing together of these three fields, what we see is a huge amount of patenting activity going on here. But I'd be a little bit interested to talk to you, listen to what you've got to say about who the typical applicants are in this field. Because when I look at the list of top applicants, we've got Philips are just inside the top 10, and we know that they've got a major, major healthcare division. And you've got Johnson & Johnson at position 13, but we tend to think of Johnson & Johnson as a classic pharma company. So let's start with you, Ricardo. What do you see in terms of the nature of our applicants in this area?
Thank you, Jeremy. We clearly see that there are big players in the competitive arena, but we also see on a day-to-day basis more and more applications coming from startup companies and small companies, which use the patent system as a venture for capital. And we also see that former big players, for instance, in telecom, like Nokia.
Nokia, wow. I'm going to go look at the Finland statistics now and see where they are. Okay. But yeah, so there's a renaissance for some of the older telecom players coming back now, specifically in the medtech arena.
Definitely. We see it every day. And we also see other big players in other fields that were pretty active, for instance, Fujifilm. Is now filing more and more medtech applications.
And I would agree with Ricardo, in particular, in what has to do with the startups. Let's remember that we are talking here about tech innovation applied to healthcare. And we all know how active startups are in the field of tech. And this is also explained by the fact that in order to innovate in tech, the amount of hardware that you need or the investments that you need in hardware are rather limited. But I think that further examples of applicants from outside of the healthcare ecosystem, which are also innovating in smart health, are big players like Apple and Google. And these players are clearly leveraging on their data processing technologies and on the market position that they already have, because they are now developing health monitoring applications that they can easily integrate into their existing platforms and to in their existing devices.
And certainly one of the things that I've noticed for a while, for years I've been plotting charts where I've been comparing the rise in patent applications in medtech against pharma and biotech, for example. And the fact that pharma and biotech applications until recently were fairly flat relative to medtech. It's interesting now pharma is really taking off again as well. What comes across very clearly, it's seeing the significantly greater amount of patent applications in medtech is that in the healthcare industry in general, the barriers to market entry for bringing a new medicine to market are so much higher because of clinical trials and so on, that for quite a lot of devices, medtech might not be there. And so if you've got either a device that can cure a disease or some sort of complaint, or you've got the overheads of developing a new medicine and trying to bring it to market, you're clearly going to go down the device route. So I think that sort of explains the difference there.
It's interesting that you make this observation, because when we look at what we consider traditional pharmaceutical players, what we're also seeing is that they're also getting into smart health development. These companies, they might have had already data that they have acquired via their experience or their business in pharma, but they were missing the data processing know-how. And in fact, we see that many of them are acquiring this data processing know-how either by integrating the experts into their structure or by directly acquiring the smaller companies that deal with the data processing.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of business strategy in there as well. Look, I've mentioned a couple of the technology fields. Let's look particularly at what seems to be a sort of convergence of the top three technology fields: in digital communication, medical technologies, and computer tech. So what have we got? We've got over 45,000-46,000 applications to the EPO last year in that field. It's got to be well over 20%. Probably it's not quite a quarter of everything we received just came in those three fields, which is astonishing. Ricardo?
Yeah, definitely, Jeremy. Here we see a convergence of these three top fields: digital communication, medtech, and computer technology, as they are nicely cooperating together in the same application. So the latter is giving us the computational power to process more and more data, which are required to perform diagnosis and to take decisions on data, which are collected by sensors that are getting more and more performing. What we also see is that the wearable device, for instance, are more and more interconnected among each other, among cloud or clinical centers, to have what we can call the representation of a fourth industrial revolution. So we see that we have a demanding application, which is the medical field. We have enabling technologies, for instance, artificial intelligence and the computational power, which is providing more and more possibilities.
Yeah, at a tangent to this, I'd also remark the ever-increasing performance from ever smaller chips is clearly also being driven by one of the other technical fields for patent applications. This is semiconductor technology. And okay, that's not one of the top 10 technology fields, so it sort of misses out on the headlines, but the patent index shows, if you drill down into the data, the growth in semiconductor tech is truly astonishing. It was up 20% just in the last year, and it's been up almost 50% in the last 3 years. So there is a huge amount of innovation going on in semiconductor tech. And you know, this is certainly going to play into ever more powerful wearable devices, phenomenal computing power in tiny, tiny devices.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, we are seeing a tremendous improvement in computational power, and the size of the microchip are shrinking more and more over the years. If you consider that the microcontroller of an Apple smartphone is about 1 billion times faster than the guidance computer of the Apollo 11 that was used to send the man to the moon.
Wow.
They consume only a little fraction of the power and really tiny dice.
Amazing.
So I think that this shifting of innovation towards new technologies, we are seeing it across the board. And medical technology is not going to be the exception. If we look at it from a historical perspective, we saw that innovation in medical technology started with medical devices, which were mostly mechanical. Then the next wave of innovation came via the incorporation of electronics. But now the strong innovation trends that we are seeing rely more and more on communication technologies and on data analysis. And actually, I must say that I have experienced this change as an examiner. I remember 20 years ago examining insulin injection pens, which were purely mechanical, while now I examine applications dealing with the data processing algorithms that determine the amount of insulin to be injected.
I'd like to just mention on wearables, this was one of the things that was covered in the feature article. So there's a lovely feature article in the Patent Index on smart healthcare written by Ben Tendler. It's a great feature. And in that, he's included a chart that compares the increasing amount of applications in certain technical fields, and it includes wearables. And okay, it's not the top one that he's focused on, but the rise is very, very clear that numbers of patent applications for wearables have increased several times over just in the last few years.
Yeah, indeed, Jeremy. We see on a day-to-day basis more and more applications about wearable devices. The devices are getting smaller, more powerful, and they last for longer. They can either process data internally and send only the results to a clinician, or they can pre-process or partially process data, and they send pre-processed data or even raw data to a cloud, and then data are interpreted in a second phase by a clinician or even by artificial intelligence. We also need to think about what we can do with a wearable device. I mean, in the old days, let's say 20 years ago, a wearable device for monitoring a patient was just a distress button in a necklace of grandma. Now we have really complex device that can take diagnosis, not just the heart rate, they can perform a complete ECG, or even check the oxygen level in blood, or even check the glucose level in blood without taking a single drop of blood. So they can really do a lot of things, and we are really going to small diagnostic platform, and the patient doesn't even notice that data are acquired and sent to a clinician.
I've seen it like heart rate sensors built into a wearable. Yeah, blah, obvious. But I had no idea that they could even do ECG monitoring. Wow.
Ricardo mentioned complex devices related to glucose measuring. And I think one of them, one impressive one of them, is what we call an artificial pancreas. You have a diabetes patient who's wearing a patch stick probably to the upper arm with a small needle inserted inside that measures continuously glucose values of in the interstitial fluid. Okay, this data is then processed internally by the device, and then sent to a small pump that the user also has attached to his skin or her skin. And there, a small, or let's say this with the data that has been gathered by the sensing patch, the appropriate level of insulin is then determined, and then the pump injects this appropriate level of insulin directly into the patient's blood. So actually...
And this is all just a patch?
It's a patch or two patch, one for the sensor, one for the pump.
Like one of these sort of nicotine patches.
Exactly like that, yeah. And it's all worn under the clothes of the patient, and you would not even notice that your colleague has such a device.
Okay. And in this sense, then the decision, you know, how much insulin and when to provide it, is being taken by a little computer brain inside the patch. So there's no clinical decision involved, no doctor is involved in deciding that. So that decision is effectively being taken by an AI.
Yes. There is an AI algorithm that takes into account the glucose values that are being measured. It could be that additionally the patient via the smartphone enters what he has eaten that day so that those calories or those food intakes are also input into the algorithm. And with all that information, then the appropriate amount of insulin is calculated.
It sort of then leads us onto the AI topic, because I know that it's really captured the public's imagination in recent months. There's a lot of people talking about ChatGPT, for example, and certain people are saying, oh, you know, AI is going to be taking over the world and we're not ready for it. But there's been quite a lot of AI used in medtech for years, and nobody seems to have a problem with it because the benefits are just so clear.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I think AI is really useful in diagnosis, because these AI systems are great for spotting patterns and trends that a human mind might miss. I mean, imagine that a medical doctor, when establishing a diagnosis, the doctor has to consider not only the current physiological values of the patient, but also the patient's profile, the historical trends, environmental values that might affect sensing or the condition of the patient. So when this number of elements to be considered for establishing a diagnosis really increases, that's when AI proves to be essential. I mean, the doctor or a human mind is limited, but actually what a computer can handle is nowadays almost unlimited. Another very interesting example of AI diagnosis is the one carried out on medical images. AI can now detect patterns in an image related to a tumor that a human eye might overlook, and this with lower resolution images. So it means that you can radiate with less radiation the patient to obtain a lower resolution image that then can be analyzed by artificial intelligence.
Wait a moment. because what I recall from patent examining is that there's a particular exclusion that says you may not patent a method of treatment, surgery, or diagnostic method for humans or animals. That's one of the things that you can't patent. So if methods of diagnosis aren't patentable, how are patents being applied for and even granted in this area?
You're right, Jeremy. I mean, you're talking about Article 53C of the EPC.
Oh, thank you. Am I? I couldn't remember. Thank you.
Basically, you cannot patent a method of diagnosis, of surgery, or a therapeutical method, but you can patent a tool that uses that method, and also tools that use artificial intelligence to perform a diagnosis are in principle patentable. So there is room to get a patent, but not out of the method itself.
Okay, it's the tools. Even if the tool is using software, a tool is a tool.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, good.
And then even if it's not in the patent law, here in this area of diagnostic, there's always the question of liability. So who is liable for issuing a certain diagnostic? And of course, that at the end has to be the doctor, the medical doctor. But all the information provided by the AI to the medical doctor will certainly assure that the diagnostic is more accurate.
From your experience, both of you as patent examiners, are there any areas in which we are seeing patent applications using digital technologies with a healthcare application that maybe aren't on the radar of, you know, the general public? They're not areas where you would normally think that computer tech is going to make a significant impact on healthcare.
Well, I don't know whether they will be in the radar or not, but an area where we also receive applications is those that aim at facilitating the administrative side of healthcare. In how far they can be patented, that's another question. But we do see applications dealing with the optimization of medical resources to make sure that the use of beds, the use of the devices and instruments in the hospitals, even the capacity of the personnel in the hospital is optimized. And another example is electronic health records, which these are digital versions of a patient's medical record. And they're already quite common. But the next step will probably be to incorporate blockchain technology to health records to thereby increase the security and the privacy of these records. These health records, they are also very often not yet digitalized, and they might contain non-structured data. So we also need here technology that can be used to structure the data, digitalize the data, and anonymize the data if it has to be then farther used to train AI algorithms.
Well, maybe the EPO can help with that, because we spent years digitalizing our archive of printed paper patent documents going back decades. So we've got some experience with this sort of digitalizing a paperback file.
Indeed, a lot of technology behind that, yes.
If I may add something from my perspective.
Yeah, please, Ricardo.
What we also see are smaller and smaller devices which can perform more and more complex tasks in terms of diagnosis, in terms of sensing capabilities. This is a trend we see on a day-to-day basis. I mean, the devices are getting smaller and they are leveraging on computational power of smartphones or wearable devices which are not dedicated medical devices. It has been a trend in the past 10 years. I mean, in the old days, you get a medical monitoring device that was performing all the computation, all the sensing, and all the diagnosis in a single box. Now, we are distribution of tasks among different modules, and most of them are not definitely medical devices. I mean, there is an interconnection between different blocks to perform a task.
And what about the AI behind the chatbots? I mean, I think we have already chatbots providing, chatbots providing medical information and support to patients 24/7, and the patient can hardly realize that they're talking to a machine.
I'm a little bit skeptical. I'm not sure I'd necessarily trust Alexa to diagnose me, but I can certainly see, at least in call centers and things like that, medical advice call centers, chatbots, why not? We're getting near the close, so it would be fun just to ask you both, what you imagine the future is going to look like, or what do you hope the future of smart healthcare is going to bring in the next few years? Ricardo?
From what we see these days, I think we will go into a future of more complex wearable devices that can detect a disease sooner. For instance, combining biological parameters with, for instance, purchasing habits or lifestyle habits, and then to perform a more accurate diagnosis and predict an early onset of a disease.
I read an article a couple of weeks ago about just that, that AI was looking at the purchasing habits. So the things that customers were buying, basically they had access to their loyalty card data. And on the basis of, you know, if you buy this in combination with that, and it was particularly if you were buying particular foodstuffs in combination with particular types of medication, the AI decided that that was a predictor for a particular type of disease long before the patient was showing symptoms serious enough to be referred to a doctor. Carlos?
Yeah, no, I think when I look into the future, from the side of innovation, I'm convinced that these trends of innovation are going to continue at a very high pace. But one thing is the innovation, and the other thing is how this innovation is integrated into our healthcare systems. At the end of the day, that's what we want. I mean, we want to benefit from those improved diagnostics. We want to benefit from those improved services in the healthcare system. And I think here, what we need is that innovators, legislators, and managers of healthcare and social security systems work closely together so that the implementation of this innovation takes place at a fast pace and society can really benefit from this incredible jump in the services that we get.
Yeah, the technology is providing us with so many new opportunities. But I'm really sorry. We're out of time. That's it. It's been great fun talking to you both. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeremy. It was a pleasure for me.
The same for me, Jeremy. Thanks a lot. It was a really nice chat.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Hey, and thanks to all of you out there for listening. Now, the EPO publishes fresh podcasts on new technologies and studies on the economic impact of patents and advice for innovators. So keep coming back and check out more podcasts soon. And there'll be another one in relation to the patent index on new energy landscapes. So watch out for that as well. But for today, from Carlos, Ricardo, and myself, it's goodbye.
Adios.
Arrivederci.
Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye.
Subscribe to the European Patent Office's podcast channel, Talk Innovation, at epo.org or on your favorite podcast platform. Let's Talk Innovation.